Let's do that hockey.
Welcome to Dauber Prospects Report, a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. This is report number 47. I'm Victor Nuno, one of the co-hosts here, and with me is Peter Harling. How you doing, Pete?
Hey, Victor. I am super good, man. I had a really nice weekend just this past one. I went on a little road trip with my girl. We saw a concert in Ottawa, and then I took in a hockey game in Ottawa. It's always good to see games in other rinks, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And that's the subject of today's podcast. We're going to talk about your road trip. Oh, no, actually, we're going to talk about the OHL game you went to. But maybe we'll talk about your road trip if you want.
Concert was good. I highly recommend Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats.
Oh, yeah, I saw some pictures of that. Well, I don't know who they are, but it looked fun. So we're going to talk about the game that you went to. Was OHL game London at Ottawa. So some good players there to talk about. And this episode is brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network and DraftKings. Follow at HockeyPodNet for more great hockey podcasts. You can use our DraftKings promo code THPN for listening to the show. More on that in a bit. We're also proudly sponsored by Fantrax, the ultimate league manager for any dynasty sport you play. It is completely customizable for however you want to set up your league, from scoring categories, an amazing draft room to host the draft pick trading, and a treasury option, plus so much more. Use our promo code to sign up for a free league using the link Fantrax.com/DPR show. All right. So we decided a few guys to talk about here, Pete. And the first one is Oliver Bonk. And why don't you take it away with your eye test?
Right. So this is a really entertaining game, first of all. I went into overtime and shootout. And in the game, Easton Cowan set a London Knights franchise all-time record for point streak, going about 26 games now and counting, I believe, with at least a point. So this is a pretty heady company that he's beat out for streaks in that organization. They've had a few guys go through there that turned out to be pretty decent NHL players, if memory serves me correctly. But back to your point, Oliver Bonk. So it's nice to see him play live. I've seen him on video a little bit over the last couple of years. And the first thing that stood out to me in this game at a glance was his mobility. This guy gets around the ice really gracefully. He's a very mobile defender, and he's got pretty decent size. I mean, he's not huge, but he's certainly no shrinking violet either. He's really quick to jump up into offensive opportunities. He is an offensive driven player. He leads the OHL in power play points as a defenseman. Sorry, power play goals, more specifically. But what I like about him is I don't see him. He's not a riverboat gambler, right? He's not taking high-risk plays. He's not like Ryan Merkley, where the offense is very, very attractive, but sometimes very, very subject to questionable decisions. He's partnered with Dickinson. We'll talk more about Dickinson in a bit. And he defers to him quite a bit. Like, he's a very support role player for Sam Dickinson. In both offensively and defensively. It's not like he plays the defense to Sam Dickinson's offense. He plays the support to him on both sides of the puck, it seems. And I'm really curious if that's his decision, like a confidence thing, or if that's like a team strategy or a coaching decision where, you know, the coach tells him Dickinson's the alpha and you make sure that you're covering when he rushes and make sure that there's no holes or gaps anywhere. And he does it really well, to his credit. So, and I don't see Oliver Bonk projecting to the NHL as a number one defenseman. So this is a skill that will suit him well as he moves up higher in the rankings in the leagues. He really shines on the power play. That's where he becomes a very attractive player to watch. He's very in control on the point and in his distribution of the puck. I saw him make some significant development in his draft year. If you remember, he was kind of off the radar at the beginning of the year. And, you know, by the World Juniors time of year, halfway through the season, people were really starting to give him some buzz about playing his way into the first round. He ended up being a pretty decent first round draft pick for Philadelphia as well. And he's continued that momentum through his draft plus one season, which is something that you really like to see. He's had a really solid rookie and NHL training camp as well, by all accounts. You know, people we spoke to that that were there, like James Iacoboni, said really impressed with the way Bonk handled himself at that level. His Fantrax rostership is 16%. I think that number should be a lot higher. This is a player I see as a really reliable, projectable NHL player. I think he's got a floor of a second pairing with the potential of, you know, top pairing kind of a guy. Maybe not a number one, not in a team that has good defensive depth anyways. But I mean, we're talking about worst case scenario, he's in your middle pairing, and best case scenario, he's in your top pairing. I'll take those odds all day long. So that's kind of what I saw from Bonk, mostly in this game, but you know, over the last 2 years as well. Victor, what's your thoughts on this guy?
Well, I definitely agree with you that rostership is woefully low. It should be way higher than that. And yeah, I think that there's some interesting things there for sure. I mean, I think it's not terribly surprising that he, you know, had a bit of a big increase this year. I think that's something that we've come to see before in London players. You know, they tend to not get the most opportunity, you know, until they're a little bit older. And so, and getting a little bit more power play time, getting a little bit more opportunity. And the London has a really good, as we're going to talk about later, draft eligible player. And so it's not surprising that more of the power play opportunity is going to the older player. That's just kind of how it works. And so that's really helping to boost up a lot of his points. But I don't think that that's not to say that he isn't deserving of it or that he isn't, you know, good at that. As you said, the mobility is key with Bonk, and the way that he moves on the blue line, I think, is really translatable, even if he's not like the most dynamic sort of scorer. But yeah, I think he's a really fantastic player. And the fact that he's increasing his, you know, points and equivalency so dramatically in this draft plus 1 year, that's a huge thing. His hockey prospecting has gone up 10% since his draft season. That's really big. It's really hard to increase your equivalency that much, but he did have a little bit of a subdued draft year just in terms of total points. I mean, 40 points in 67 games. Now he has 60 points in 49 games. So big kind of flip there. And his PNHLE is trending really high. I mean, it was already in the low 40s, and it's trending up to the high 70s right now. So, I mean, I don't think he really is a 70-point defenseman, but showing that increase is just really, really nice. And one of the other things that I'll be talking about as we go through some of these players is over at Fantasy Hockey Life, we just got together these player cards that I've been working on for a long time, and they show some really interesting metrics, including shots, blocks, and hits per 60 minutes for some of these guys in junior leagues, which I think is really hard to find. So one thing you can see very clearly for Bonk is that his shots are great. He shoots a lot. He blocks a fair amount. But he doesn't hit very much. So if those are of interest to you, that's important to keep in mind. His penalty minutes are kind of average. The way that we design these cards is that penalty minutes are bad, because that's what I think they are. Generally, minor penalties anyways are not good for your team. But overall, the points upside for Bonk is really high. And because of his shots and blocks, the peripheral coverage should be pretty good. So, yeah, I definitely think that it's a little interesting how under-rostered he is, you know, but I think that that will probably continue to increase as you know, people realizing what a strong season he's having. So, yeah, I definitely mentioned this player. And I think for a late second-round pick, this is looking more and more like what could have been a mid to earlier first round pick. Don't you think, Pete?
Yeah, totally. I think his Fantrax rostership is low because there's an incubation period that you're still going to have to endure here. He's got another year of OHL eligibility, and then I think you'll see a year or two of American Hockey League development as well, if Philadelphia is smart and patient with him. But the risk factor seems pretty low. Wasn't he a first round pick? I thought he was.
Yeah. He was just a little bit later. So I was saying he could have, I mean, I think going 22nd overall is fine. I think that they're getting great value for that. I mean, he's trending like maybe he should have been in the teens.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's really too early to revise that whole first round already, but he's definitely trending better than some of those picks that went around him.
Yeah. He's a solid player. you know, I like the fact that he's getting a little bit of peripheral stats too. The hits might come a little bit more as he gets in the NHL because, you know, I don't think his offense will be good enough that he'll be able to rely on that without throwing a couple of hits to really round out his game. But it certainly will never be his bread and butter. So let's talk about his defensive partner, if you're ready to move on from Bonk, and that is Sam Dickinson, not Dickskin. So he is arguably the first player who could be drafted in this year's draft, and watch him live and you'll see why. So
first defenseman,
I think. Right, not first overall. No. The first defenseman pick. Yes, thanks for clarifying. So this guy's got a vast array of weapons in his arsenal, but mobility is his best weapon, in my opinion. He's so effortless in the way he covers the ice. He's just everywhere. He can be in the corner, then he can be up at the blue line, and then he can be back in front of his goal. Like, this at the speed of the puck, it seems, and without even looking like he's lumbering, and he never looks tired or fatigued. He's very calculated in his movements, very in control. He's got a nice elegant stride. He's got quick bursts. He's got a good top end speed. He's very sturdy and he's got strong edges. You know, he pivots very well. He never looks like he's about to fall or anything like that. And he does everything with effortless power. And he combines his mobility really well with his long reach. He's a pretty big guy. He's 6'3", I think it is. And, yeah. With his ability to lunge out laterally and then extend his stick, and he's got great hand-eye coordination with his stick, he really is effective at closing gaps and letting players think that they have a lane, either a skating lane or a passing lane, and then, boop, it's just not there anymore. And he baits players into thinking that they have an opportunity, and he's on it before they even realize that it's there. He's giving it to them and then taking it away. It's very, very crafty. He's really patient when he's got the puck too. He's got such a very large panic threshold and panic bubble, right? Like, he can have players on him and, you know, other players will like throw the puck into a corner just so that they don't lose it. They don't get it taken off them. But he's like, whatever, I got this. And he can hold players because he uses his strength and his size. Hold players off with one arm, control the puck with another, or he just uses his feet and his smarts to outmaneuver them and find open space that you didn't really think that he had. And I think he knew it was there all along. He makes really quality NHL stretch passes too. Now, this can either be for, you know, long, hard passes to players streaking through the neutral zone and hitting them in stride. He did that once or twice. And he's also really good at finding open players who are standing on the other side of the red line, between the red and the blue line, so that you can get the puck in deep for a line change. He puts it right on. They don't even have to knock it out of the air or anything. He just puts it right on their stick at about a million miles an hour, and it goes off their stick blade in behind the other team's net, and boom, you got a line change. So he's got really good, precise, hard, crisp passing. I also noticed that he's really calculated with his shot selection. This was really impressive. A couple different times I saw him use different types of shots from the point. Once was there was a whole bunch of traffic in front. He has the puck on his stick. No players are coming out to aggressively forecheck him. He's got his head up and he's moving the puck. He's stick handling. He's moving around. He's dancing on the blue line. He's looking for a lane. He's looking for a player that's open. Nothing really presented itself. So he puts a really nice, it turned out to be very like a play that was like nothing, and it turned into something. He'd like thread the needle with a hard low wrist or snapshot, and you know, he's fishing for tips or deflections or rebounds, and he almost got one. I think it went off someone's leg and then off the post. The goalie never saw it because there was so much traffic. It was great. And then another scenario, they're on the power play, and he was open on the point, and he got a nice pass from Bonk, I believe, right across the blue line, and he just hammered it. One timer, and he overpowered the goalie with the shot from the point, scored a nice goal. So he's got, you know, like I said at the beginning, he's got a vast array of weapons in his arsenal that he can use. So I can see a lot of the appeal with this player. You know, we've had some other guys come on and talk to us about the draft. One of the biggest fans of this guy is probably Brock Otten. He had some pretty glowing things to say about him. And Scott Wheeler had some really nice things to say about him when he was on our show as well. I've seen him. I got some really nice things to say about him too. His offensive upside isn't as good as some of the other players in this draft. So perhaps from a fantasy perspective, there's a bigger reward factor in going with some other guys like maybe Parekh or even maybe Levshunov. But the projectability of him being an impactful NHL defenseman is so high, and his floor is so high as well, that, you know, I'd be, if I had to take a defenseman first with my first round pick, if all the good forwards are gone, I would be very hard pressed not to take Sam Dickinson first defenseman in my fantasy draft. Victor, what do you think about that?
I would be very happy for you to take Sam Dickinson as your first, as the first defenseman if I was in your league, because I agree with you that he has one of the highest floors, if not the highest floor of any of the defensemen in this league. There's no question about that. His skating and the way he's already reading the play is phenomenal. He's going to be an NHLer. I think it's hard to imagine him being anything less than a second pairing NHLer just by how good he is already. But there's a world where maybe he's the third pairing, but he's going to play for sure. Like, so the security of getting someone who plays, that means his name is getting called very early on day one of the NHL draft. And I can't imagine him falling out of the top 10, maybe even falling out of the top five. I mean, it's going to be tough for teams to pass on that package. One thing that I find interesting, though, and I want to get your immediate take on this before I say some of the other things, is I've heard a lot of people talk about his panic meter. And I heard you say, and I know this is true, at times he can be really patient and calculated with the puck, but sometimes when he's pressured, he will kind of just throw it off the boards or throw it up the ice. So, you know, that's going to be an issue as he raises in levels if he has a hard time with that. Now, I don't know if what you saw live from him. That was only one game, obviously, but did you see some of that?
No, I saw the opposite. I saw there were times where he was under duress and it wasn't a problem. He didn't panic. He didn't throw it blindly anywhere. He was just able to maintain possession of the puck and outmaneuver the forecheckers that were pressing him and either clear it and not what I would consider to be a panic mode. But if you're in your zone and you're, you know, killing a penalty, for example, and you don't have, even if you do have a pass, it's sometimes just not a good idea to try and pass it up the middle in your own zone when you're shorthanded. That ends up in the back of your net more often than not. No, that's one of the things that actually impressed me the most about him, Victor, was, and like, to your point, this was just one game, but that was one of the more impressive components of his game that gave me confidence that this is a guy who is playing above his peer group. He is better than the other players in this game. And it was like an all-star game.
Yeah, I mean, that's great to hear. And maybe some of those concerns were earlier in the season, but that's important to note. And yeah, no, I think that he's looking really good. And you look at his hockey prospecting, 27% chance of being a star. He's got some great comps like Sergachev, Subban, OEL. There's also some Noah Juulsen in there, which wouldn't be a great outcome. You look at his PNHLE and he's already trending up to, like, you know, first line, between superstar and first line potential with guys like Morgan Riley, but also Chris Russell, Cody Ceci. And when you look at our FHL card, you can see that his shots per 60 are good, even though, as you said, and I agree with this from what I've seen, he's more of a selective shooter. He's not someone that's just flipping it on net all the time, but he still shoots a fair amount, especially compared to his other peripherals. Like, his hits and blocks are not great. And I think this is probably also partially due to the fact that he's a good rush defender. So he's not getting trapped in the zone as much. He's probably not having to hit or block as much because, you know, they're playing with the puck, or, you know, he's breaking things up earlier. So that isn't necessarily a knock on him. But if you're wanting someone who's going to hit and block in a lot, that might not be Sam Dickinson. That might be someone else you're looking for. He also doesn't take very many minor penalties, which I think is a good thing. So anyways, overall, I think that he's, you know, such a high floor, but I do think that he's someone who it doesn't have the most dynamic offensive ability. I think he's someone who is to some extent benefiting from the environment, and he's doing a good job with it. But I think some of the points that he's getting are a little bit over exaggerating his potential as an offensive defenseman. You know, 62 points in 57 games is a lot for a draft eligible defenseman. It's a whole lot. And I think that, you know, he's someone who can certainly work in a role where there's a strong offensive team and drive play. But I think if you're looking at him as, you know, a possible point per game defenseman in the NHL, I don't really think that that's realistic. I think he's probably more of like a 40 point guy, 35 to 45 point guy. He's not someone who's going to command power play time, but he certainly could run a second power play, and he's got a great shot. So yeah, that's kind of what I think about him. But if you want someone with a super high floor, especially in your fantasy drafts, as this is getting, you know, closer to like 5 to 10 overall, you'd be hard pressed to pass on him.
He's going to play a lot of minutes. So being on the ice a lot is conducive to collecting stats of all kinds of variety. All right. So let's move on to another London player, and we'll hit on Denver Barkey, Philadelphia Flyers prospect now. This is an interesting player. He's very energetic, very easy to notice on the ice. He's like a water bug. He's really quick. He's all over the ice. He's not afraid to hold on to the puck for extended periods. You know, he will carry the puck in the zone, behind the net, out the other side, across the point, do a couple laps, waiting for an opportunity. It's like he's playing keep away with the puck. Guys can't get the puck off of him at times. So it's pretty impressive. His high-end skill that he has and his feet are pretty dexterous as well. So high-end puck skill and puck control, you can't give him a pass that he can't handle, it seems. He knocks pucks out of the air, takes passes that are behind him and kicks them up to his stick or and whatnot, really deftly. He's versatile. He's got hustle at both ends of the ice. He's effective forechecker. He's an effective defender. Pressures the other team that when they have the puck, and he's forced some errors and turnovers. That was impressive. He is a little undersized, and he might not win a lot of the one-on-one battles at the OHL level, let alone at the pro level. And that's the rub with this player. He's looking like he's a potential tweener. And we've talked about these guys before. My go-to is a comparison for tweeners is Glenn Godden or Matthew Phillips. So that's kind of what I saw with Denver Barkey. He plays with pace. He plays with skill. He might be very effective at the American Hockey League, but I'm not sure I see that translating to the NHL, Victor. What's your take on Denver Barkey?
Well, first of all, great name, right? Yeah. Love that. Yeah, he's leading the team in points too, by the way. Although yeah. Cowan took a little break to represent Canada, so that might be closer.
And London has like 9 players with 20 goals or more. They're a very offensive team.
Yeah, this is part of what my comment about Dickinson. They score a lot. And so if he's on a team that scores a lot, I think he's involved. But is he driving it? Some of it, but I don't know. I don't know about all of it. But Barkey, you know, maybe I missed it, but I don't remember if you mentioned his size. He's listed at 5'9", 154. I don't know if he looked that small in person, because it seems like he plays a lot bigger than his size.
No, he looks small when he's out there. And he looks like, you know, this, we've talked about the difference between being small or short. He's small. He doesn't have fire hydrant bulldog strength. Yeah, you know, he tries. He's got the gumption. He'll try. He'll throw what weight he has around. It's just not very effective.
Not very much.
No.
Yeah. So yeah, drafted 95th overall just last year. Still, he was in his draft year listed at 5'8", so it seems like maybe he grew an inch, but he's still small, as you mentioned. But the points have dramatically increased this year. I mean, he was right at basically just under a point per game last season for London, and really great in the playoffs. By the way, he was kind of a second half riser, and then he has 82 points in 53 games at point that we're recording this right now. So massive increase in points. His hockey prospecting star potential went from 19 to 29. His NHL probability stayed similar. I think that's something that Byron does for players that are a little bit on the small side. So it's not going to increase that much for him. But he's got some interesting comps in that model. So Jason Robertson, Zach Hyman are, of course, the outliers that would be hard to reach that point. But Oliver Bjorkstrand, maybe Zane Widstrom, a couple guys that he maybe looks a little bit like. In the PNHLE model, he's trending up towards the first line potential, close to high 70 point potential. Some comps there are Ryan O'Reilly or Dave Boland. Sorry, not Ryan O'Reilly, Ryan Getzlaff. That would be way more exciting. But again, not the size of those players. So unlikely to hit that high end potential. And probably not terribly surprising due to his size. He's not the biggest banger, although he does throw a decent number of hits for a smaller guy. His shots aren't super high end either, but he does a little bit of that, probably on the lower, just below average end for your bash. But his assists are really high and his points potential is high, especially for someone who's a third round talent. I think Denver Barkley is a big riser. And, we'll see. Right now, I'm interested because the Flyers have a guy who's, smaller and just kind of breaking into the NHL right now, and Bobby Brink. And it took him a while. He went to the college route, but he's finally kind of finding his way. And so it took him a while, and maybe this is something that'll be similar for Barkey. Maybe he can follow a similar development path, but you're also a little bit concerned about having too many guys like that on your team. You can't have, I think, too many, undersized kind of wingers like that. But I think that as a big riser, Denver Barkey is someone who should definitely garner your interest. And unfortunately, though, I think it's more likely just a points only kind of play, because I don't think the perifs are going to be huge for him. It's going to be, can he translate those points or not? But he's still got a lot of time, to figure that out. So it's not like he's going to be turning pro next year. He's got one more year in the OHL. And then as an April birth date, he'll be eligible to finally do that next year and go into the professional ranks. So I'm definitely watching him, Pete. What about you?
Yeah, he's certainly a player to keep your eye on. I like the... If he makes it to the NHL, it's going to be in an offensive role, right? He's going to be in the first top six on an NHL roster, or he's not going to make it, right? Like Glenn Gaudin and Matthew Phillips. He's good defensively and he's got energy, but I'm not sure that the physicality, lack thereof, translates to a bottom six NHL role on most teams. And so that's the rub, right? He's a bit of a boom or bust, think, kind of prospect. Light the lamps with DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and sign up with code THPN. That's code THPN only at DraftKings Sportsbook. So another London Knights player that we have to talk about, Leafs fans will enjoy this, is Easton Cowan. And as I mentioned, in this game, he set the London Knights all-time record for point streak at 26 games, I think it is. And so what stands out about him in the eye test, Victor, is his hockey sense. It is through the roof. He tracks the puck and anticipates the play at a level well above his peers. He goes where the puck is going all the time. And he just reads plays and anticipates and reacts, drives the play extremely well. His shot has a lot of heat on it, and his hands are very skilled. His puck skills are very advanced. He handles the puck extremely well, always in control. He makes really quick touches and thinks the play with pace. Several times he displayed very good, give and go, touch and go. And when I'm not sure if you were on this podcast with me, but I had Gus on for a podcast, and we were talking about scouting and how do you see hockey sense. And that's one of the things he says: if you get the puck and then you make a pass really quickly and you improve the pace of the play, it shows that you're thinking about the play before you get it. You see where the play is going and where the opportunities are. And that's something that Easton Cowan was doing all over the ice all night long. So I was really impressed with that. He doesn't really have any glaring liabilities in his game, right? Like, he's got okay size. He's a little on the short side, but he never looked overmatched physically. He, you know, compensates for it with hockey sense and positioning and speed, and, you know, distributes the puck before he's in trouble. All those good things. And, you know, he really carries the offense and drives the offense and plays with pace. And that is extremely projectable. This is a player who I can easily see playing at the professional level with his pace, sense, and skill. Wow. Really curious to hear what your take on Easton Cowan is.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot. I mean, I agree with a lot of what you said. He seems like just such a smart player and knows, anticipates well, as you mentioned, going to where the puck is, knowing where players are going to be. He seems to be ahead of the play a lot. And I think sometimes when you talk about a smart player, sometimes people will use that maybe as a negative, like, you know, he's not as dynamic. And I don't think he's as dynamic maybe as some players, but he also doesn't put you in a bad position as a team by trying things that, you know, that have a low percentage of working and then you get a turnover. Like, he doesn't do that kind of stuff. He's very calculated. He's safe, you know, in like a good way, not like a bad way. But I think that hockey sense can translate to a decent number of points. I don't think he's going to be just relegated to like a bottom six player. And his hockey prospecting has really jumped up. I mean, he was kind of low last year in terms of his production. I mean, I think that he was kind of trending positively. A lot of people, you know, Brock Otten and others mentioned how he was trending up, even though he ended with 53 points in 68 games. He was over a point per game in the playoffs. His second half was stronger than his first. So it's not terribly surprising. And a lot of people predicted that he would be someone who pops off in his D plus one. And that is kind of what's happening. 70 points in 44 games is a really strong increase. And his hockey prospecting has more than tripled from 6 to 19%. It was kind of low to begin with. So 19% is good. It's not amazing, but it's a really big increase for him. So that's all very positive. And his PNHLE is increased all the way up to like point per game, which is unlikely, I think, for him. But maybe he hits that at his peak in the right situation, depending on how soon he gets on the Leafs with all these talented forwards that they have. It's certainly possible. Some of his comps are like Brandon Saad, Mike Fisher, Matthew Perreault. So certainly, I would say kind of good complimentary guys, but none of them were like the guy on their line for the most part. And I think that he seems like he'll be a good glue guy, someone who could really, you know, help a line work well together and get a lot of points and not be like a total passenger, be an important part of that perspective. Looking at our Fantasy Hockey Life card, the shots are the best part of his bash, but he does hit and block a little bit, you know, kind of like an average amount. So it's not like a total black hole there. And he doesn't take a lot of penalties, which I think is good. His assists are better than his goals in terms of his per 60, but the points are really where it's showing out for him. I also have a card here from the U20 World Junior Championships, which is kind of interesting because he definitely hit a lot more in that tournament, which is kind of funny. I'm not sure if that means anything. And of course, we know he didn't score as much in that tournament, but that was more a function of the team as a whole. But it was interesting to see him kind of how he acted in that role and that he does have more physicality, more grit to him in that isolated situation. So maybe there is more of a peripheral floor there, but I think that's not really his game. As you said, it's more the hockey sense. It's more the knowing, understanding how the play is working, where to go and where to feed teammates. So yeah, I definitely am a big fan, but I do think that for the most part, if you have a diehard Leafs fan in your league, you're probably better off trading Cowan to that person if you can get like a really high upside for him, because I'm not sure that he's really going to be that point per game player. I think he's probably more realistically in the 60 to 70 range, which is great if it works out. But like, if I could get a for sure higher end prospect, I might do that. Depends on what it is. Tweet at us, let us know. But Pete, you probably wouldn't overpay for him, but I know a lot of Leafs fans who would.
I'd trade some defensemen for him.
Lane Hutson for Easton Cowan, let's go.
I don't know about that. I think you're right on the money there, though. I don't see this as being a point-a-game player in the NHL necessarily. I mean, he's trending up hard, since the start of his draft season. And, you know, if he keeps this meteoric rate of increase going, then that's where he's headed. I just think he's going to plateau out once he hits the American Hockey League level. I mean, he'll go back to the OHL next year and just be a force. He'll be totally dominant. I think his increased peripherals in the World Junior that you mentioned, I think that's a product of the role that he played, where he wasn't the top pairing guy for Team Canada. So, you know, they asked him to be a defender and an energy player. And then, you know, when you get a chance to show your offensive chops, they go for it. But your primary purpose here is don't get scored on and create some energy for us, create some momentum. And you know, it's nice to see that he was successful at that. He was one of the better players for Canada, in my opinion. Okay, so sorry, Leaf fans, we're going to move on. I had two people ask me to take some notes on this player. Victor was one of them, and so was one of my hockey pool friends. So that would be San Jose Sharks prospect Kasper Hultinen. So the eye test from him from this game was, you know, this is a tall player. He's pretty tall. He comes in at 6'3", and he weighs just over 200 pounds. But he's a pretty passive player for that size. His forechecking was pretty wanting, right? Like, there was a couple of plays where Ottawa had possession in the London zone, and as the winger, it's his job to pressure the points and cover the points, and he would go out to, you know, about the top of the faceoff circle and then stop. I was like, yeah, he doesn't have a passing opportunity here. There's nothing behind you. There's no fear of getting burnt. Charge him. Force the play. Make him throw into the corner or pass it across the blue line. And perhaps if you're quick enough and you got your stick out there, you might even be able to intercept that if he's slow enough on the pass. He was pretty passive. He just let the guys carry the puck unless they skated right at him, it seemed. And there was a couple of scrums where he drove it to the Ottawa net. And, you know, to his credit, he chased the puck and he played to the whistle. The fact that the goalie had his glove on it didn't stop him from charging the net. And Ottawa reacted in kind, where the defenseman would reach around and give him a face full of glove and pull him off or cross-check him in the side of the head and get away from my goalie. And they really didn't have any problem knocking him down or pushing him out of the way. He's pretty pushover. So, and he was pretty ineffective in the most part of the physical one-on-ones in the corner that I saw. So as I'm formulating this thought, literally writing down, very large guy, but not very physical at all, what does he do? He destroys some Ottawa guy with the biggest hit of the game and just totally creamed him as he was trying to rush into to London's end. And I guess he caught him with his head down. I didn't see the entirety of the play because I was writing down how unphysical Hultinen is as he crushed some guy. So, you know, one game, one context. So I saw a little bit of bad. I saw a little good there. Definitely think he needs to get stronger, though. Overall, he was not very effective offensively in this game, but it was just one game. And, you know, he did have some good plays where he was able to drive the puck towards the net. There was a couple times where he was open. You know, the Ottawa lost him in coverage and he was standing beside it like an empty net and he just needed the puck to come across. It didn't. So, you know, he's got some pretty good offensive instincts. So I see there's opportunity and potential with this player, but there's a lot of work to be done still. So that's kind of what I took away from this game, Victor. There's potential here, but there's a lot of work he needs to do. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I mean, the frame is nice, right? 6'3", 207. He's a big dude, as you mentioned. And I think he took it personally that you were writing down that he's not physical. One of the things that stands out in the FHL player card is that his hits per 60 are off the charts compared to the OHL. So he does seem to be a big hitter, but maybe he's a little bit more choosy with how he does it. Also, he's an interesting guy because this is a transition year for him. He's Finnish, in case anyone didn't realize that. And he basically has played his entire career in Finland until this year, when he came over to North America. So that's got to be a little tricky for someone. And he was playing primarily in the Liga last year, which is a really tough men's league. And he basically didn't score He was great at the U20 level, but he had one assist in 27 Liga games. So kind of hard to know what to make of that. And then this year he has 27 goals in 46 games for London. So is he a goal scorer or is he on this great London Knights team? It's kind of hard to say. But like you mentioned, he can get himself into the right spots. And I think from what I've seen, he can finish when given the opportunity. So the issue is sometimes him getting to those spots because he's not the quickest dude. So if he can get there, which he seems to understand how to kind of move in space and get there ahead of the play, because he's not going to out race people with his foot speed most of the time, but he can out physical them and he can hold his spot. So what's interesting about this is his equivalency in hockey prospecting was based on his U20, and it was pretty good, 13% chance of being a star. And even though he's doing pretty well for London, it's such a lower equivalency league that his hockey prospecting has gone down to 5% and his NHL probability has gone down, even though it seems like he has this big uptick in production. So that's kind of interesting. He has some modest comps like Brandon Dubinsky and Travis Zajac. There's also a Steve Sullivan comp here, but I think he's unlike Steve Sullivan in many ways. But Kasper Haltonen in the PNHLE model is trending up. He's looking more like a second line guy, where he was well below that last year because Mason used his Liga data where he basically didn't score. And the guys he looks like there are basically replacement level guys. So he's got some ways to go. I also, for the Fantasy Hockey Life cards, I put in both the U20 World Junior Championship and the OHL because I think it's kind of interesting to compare. And unlike Cowan, he looks kind of similar in here in terms of, you know, does he hit a lot? Does he shoot a lot? And it seems pretty similar. He didn't score as much for Finland because Finland just didn't score as much in general, but he did a lot of really good stuff. And we talked about that with the player cards for Mitch Brown, but he generated a lot of offense. It just didn't go in. He doesn't take a lot of penalties and he actually blocks a fair amount for a forward. So his hits are great, his shots are great, and his blocks are decent. So he's going to have a high peripheral floor, but I think Haltonen is probably more like a third line depth scorer. And, you know, you're happy if he contributes 15 to 20 goals and, you know, maybe 20 or so assists, 20 plus assists. So if he can get to like 50, you'd be pretty happy as a Sharks fan. So I think he's probably more like a 40 to 50 point guy, but there is upside there. I think if he can figure out how to become more of a power forward in more aspects of the game, instead of just, you know, seems like when he feels like it or when the time is right, if he can be more imposing with some of that physicality and more consistent, then maybe there's a little bit more upside there. But yeah, that's some good stuff, Pete.
Yeah, thanks. I think third line player is like the best case scenario upside for Halton. All right, so that's a lot of London Knights players. There were two teams at this game. Let's talk a little bit about the Ottawa 67s. They got a couple guys. Let's start with Luca Pennelly. He is a play driver. He has some really nice puck skills as well. He can carry the puck. It's really hard to get the puck off him. He can carry it through traffic. And he showed some really good hockey sense too. Like Cowan, he plays with pace. He has a quick processor and he makes quick touches with the puck. He's got fast feet and hands. Clearly was a player that London was focusing on and shutting him down at wisely. But he still found time and space. He found it all over the ice. And that was really impressive because it was obviously something that London was consciously trying to take away from him and couldn't. That is a very translatable to pro hockey trait to have. And I can see that working all day long in the American Hockey League. And, you know, it gets a little bit older and faster and stronger and wiser. I can see that working at the NHL level. So this is a player I was really pleasantly surprised with. I own him in one of my leagues, and that made me feel even better. London had the puck for a lot of the game, but whenever Pennelly had the puck, he was making things happen, is what I saw, Victor. What do the analytics tell you about this guy?
Yeah, it's not super flattering. I think part of it is, as maybe you were insinuating there, the 67s aren't the high-scoring team that London is. But he's doing a good job. I mean, he was a fourth round pick by Columbus, by the way. He is a little bit smaller, so, you know, you have to battle some of those small guy issues a little bit. But he was just under a point per game last year. He's increased his scoring and his D+1. So you always want to see a trend in that positive direction. Some may say, well, it's not quite enough, but you know, he's still doing decently. Ottawa is kind of a middling team in the Eastern Conference there of the OHL. And in terms of they're actually pretty good defensively, but their goal scoring is one of the lowest in the league. So not as many opportunity to get points in for Pennelly. So that's important to keep in mind. His hockey prospecting has trended down, even though he's increased his scoring. I know with Byron, you have to increase it by a fair amount to get a boost. And so he went from 19 to 7%, which isn't that great. His PNHL is also pretty stagnant. He's kind of looking like a second line potential. That's potential. So like at best, you know, he might be a little bit lower than that. But the guys that he's looking at are like a Jason Dickinson. There's also like a Scott Laughton comp in here. So those are kind of maybe the guys that you're thinking about. But again, he's a lot smaller than those guys. So he might have a little bit more hurdles to overcome. And probably not terribly surprising, but his bash isn't super great. He's a little bit lower on the hits. Like average for blocks, and his shots are pretty decent. But overall, he's got more goal scoring upside than maybe some other players. And that's definitely his calling card. He has 40 goals and 27 assists. But part of that might just be if he's not scoring, then who is, right? So that may be part of the issue with Pennelly. But yeah, like you mentioned, really smart player. And yeah, I mean, he definitely seems like he's trending up, although the team, I think, context and situation might make it harder for him to seem even better than what he's doing right now.
Okay, I got an interesting exercise for you. You have a fantasy prospect roster spot available, and the two best options on the table to add these players as a free agent signing to your fantasy roster are Denver Barkey and Luca Pennelly. Who do you rather?
Oh, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Well, if we go based on my Dauber prospects rank, it's going to be Denver Barkey because I rated him quite a bit higher. I didn't have the pleasure of seeing these guys in person as you did, but I think they're different kinds of players, right? I mean, Pennelly seems like he's a little bit more cerebral and Barkey is a little bit more like high energy kind of guy. And so, you know, maybe one of those is better suited to a top six, but I think both of them have questions of whether they can actually hit that or not. I do like what I've seen from Barkey, but I think you have to take into account that it's the environment potentially to some extent in London. But I think that he right now, Barkey has shown that he has the higher upside. He's taken a bigger step forward. So I would probably go with him, but I think that I wouldn't hold it against anyone if they went Pennelly, because, you know, I think you could say maybe there's a diamond in the rough here because, you know, he doesn't look as good as he could just because of the team around him. What about you?
Yeah, I think I'd go Pennelly. I mean, it's so close. They both have the same underlying deficiency, and that's their size, right? So upside aside, which one has the better probability of overcoming the deficiency of being a small player? And I think the hockey sense is probably the biggest deciding factor in determining that. So I give the edge to Pennelly there for hockey sense, not by a wide margin either. It's pretty close, but I really liked what I saw from him in this game in terms of his hockey sense and his pace that he can play with. They both play with pace, but I just think probably would go with Pennelly, but really close. All right. That was fun. Let's move on to another player, though, that plays for Ottawa. And we've talked about this guy a number of times as well on the show with different guests, because, yes, he is draft eligible, and that is Henry Muse. The last time we talked about him was with Scott Wheeler, and my comment at the time was I'm a little disappointed with the development we've seen from Muse this season. And Scott emphatically agreed with me going into the year. Henry was trending towards being a first half of the first round prospect, maybe even a top 10 kind of guy, pretty close company with Sam Dickinson. And as the season has progressed, Sam Dickinson is now in the top 10, top five of most people's draft rankings. And Henry Muse is at the bottom of the first round. And I think we've even seen him in the second round in a couple of guys' rankings. So that's pretty disappointing, of course, right? So what's the problem with this player? Well, apparently not his offense, because he's one of the most offensively productive defensemen in the Ontario Hockey League. Here's what I saw from him in the one game that I went to. He really was very impressive. I loved what I saw from Hughes. He was Ottawa's best defenseman without question in the game. And he was arguably the best defenseman on the ice in this game. He's a very offensively minded player. He pinches very aggressively. He's constantly jumping up for scoring opportunities when the play is in the offensive zone. He's not hesitant to chase loose pucks on the sidewall at, you know, with the potential of getting burned if the puck gets past him. But in the game that I was at, he didn't make any egregious mistakes like that. He made a lot of very quick, calculated and risky decisions, and they almost always worked out very favorably for him, and they never blew up on him. He's really patient with the puck. He's got another player that has a really low panic threshold. He never looked like he was under too much duress. He joins the rush frequently, or leads the rush. And he is basically another forward on the blue line at times. Defensively, he was very effective. He disrupts rushes very well. There's a couple opportunities where he was on two-on-twos or two-on-ones, and directly because of Muse, they turned into nothing. There was one play that he was on that I think, if memory serves me correctly, it's been a few days, that London scored on a rush, and it was after he eliminated the player that had the puck, and the loose puck bounced past his partner to another guy. So I'm like, you can't really blame him for that one. He took his guy out. Someone else dropped the ball. In the defensive zone, he looked like he was in control as well. He was keeping the puck to the perimeter, keeping it in areas that aren't high danger. He was constantly pivoting his head and looking around and looking for the backdoor play and taking away guys who are unchecked at the side of the net. He was on top of that. He consistently made good decisions. He was consistently eliminating scoring lanes or passing lanes or lanes to carry the puck. What else did I think? He reads and anticipates passes and plays and then reacts to them very well. He's really quick at reading plays and anticipating what the other team is going to do and putting himself in a position where closes the door on that option, where it looks like they're going to make a pass to a player and then he'll have a lane to the net. And then before you know it, he's already closing that gap. So that was pretty smart, pretty impressive. Physically, he's pretty capable. I mean, I didn't see him throw any crushing hits or anything, but he's average size. He's 6 foot, 185 in that range. Like, he's not huge. He's not as big as Dickinson, but he has no problem eliminating players physically, you know, hitting them, pushing them against the boards, pinning them in scrums down low, pushing them, covering, tying up their stick in front of the net. Like, he can do all those things. He does it all really well too. But the best thing that he does is run the power play. He's really effective on the power play for Ottawa. He distributes the puck quickly, smartly, effectively, and he's got a pretty decent shot option as well. So, you know, after talking to Scott Wheeler, and before talking to Scott Wheeler, my stock on him was going down. I'm thinking, you know, maybe this guy isn't even a first round pick. And I've seen him live a couple times because he's in the same conference as Kingston playing for Ottawa. But seeing him play against a much better team than Kingston, the London Knights, and seeing him being really effective in that game really moved the needle back in the up direction for me here, Victor. I walked away from this game very impressed with Henry Muse, and I'm gonna reconsider him much higher in my draft rankings from my fantasy league. That was my eye test takeaway from Henry Muse, Victor. I think the stats are going to support my previous claim that I made to Scott and he shared with me. But what's your take on Muse looking at the stats?
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the notes that's in Scott's write-up of him is that there's just a lot of chaos. And I think that sometimes it doesn't go well. Sometimes his reads miss. Sometimes things are just a little inconsistent. But I think one of the keys is that he certainly has that offensive ability. And so when it goes well, it looks really good. And, you know, it sounds like you saw a lot of the really good, and there's no argument about that. I think it's more like, what does he do on the other end? Can he be consistent defensively? Can he shut down, which it sounds like he did in this game? So that's really good to hear. And maybe he's trending in the right direction, because as long as he can clean up the defensive zone and if he can be consistent on the transitions, then I think that there's a huge upside for this player, because he doesn't have some of the other issues that some defensemen have. Like he's 6'185", so he's maybe slightly on the smaller size, but he's not really small. He's not 5'9 or 5'10, and he's a right-handed shot. So these are a lot of things that, you know, people like, and he did have a really good D-minus one season. So, you know, maybe he's kind of coming around this year. And so far his hockey prospecting has him at 16% chance of being a star. I mean, that's pretty good for a draft season, draft eligible player. Some of his comps are guys like Rasmus Anderson, Brad Stewart, Adam Clendenning. So, you know, mixed bag there, but some good names. Since PNH Elite has him trending up towards a first line potential, that's probably if everything kind of rounds out correctly and consistently, maybe more of like a second or third pairing with power play time if it doesn't go as well. Some of his comps in that model are like Trevor Daley, Jamie Drysdale, Aaron Ekblad. So much better comps in that model. Looking at his Fantasy Hockey Life card, he doesn't really hit a lot. He blocks and shoots a decent amount, and he doesn't take a lot of minor penalties. So there's some peripheral floor there, but it's not as exciting. It's not as exciting as maybe you would like it to be. So there's some potential there, I think, if it all kind of works out a little bit. But I think as we talked about, and as you mentioned, there's some good potential here. Especially if you're drafting, especially if he slides and you're drafting, you know, in your second round and you could get someone with this kind of upside, then that could be really favorable. Especially, I think sometimes what we don't think about enough is the context. I mean, I think you look at these two teams that you saw, and it's easy for a middle or depth guy to look a lot better on London than maybe even some of the top players look on Ottawa, just based on where the teams are and how much talent's around them. So that's got to be taken into account a little bit. So yeah, there's definitely, seems like there's some trending up for Muse. And if he can continue to consistently play good transition defense and his own zone defense, then there's a pretty high upside for this player, I think, Pete.
Yeah, he's a player, I think, you're right, has a lot of potential to be a sleeper value pick if you get him in your second round. If I can get Henry Muse in the second round in the 25 plus range of my fantasy draft, I'll be okay with that. All right. So that's all the players we had listed. I'm going to sneak one more in here because this is a player I didn't really know very well, but he caught my attention in this game. So if that's all right with you, I just need a second to talk about him. That's Samuel Meyer. He was Ottawa's second best defenseman in this game, and he was really noticeable and impressive. Who he is a 20-year-old 6'3", 207-pound left shot defenseman, and he's gone undrafted through NHL drafts. He's got 132 career points in 192 games, mainly with the Petes, and then he's been acquired by Ottawa at the trade deadline this season. So he is on pace for 58 points in 69 games with 106 penalty minutes this season. And he was being deployed in every situation that Ottawa could play him in, and he was given all the minutes he could handle. I mean, this is a veteran player in the Ontario Hockey League with a lot of poise and experience and trust and confidence with the coaching staff there. And he is a very solid two-way defender. He stood out making so many small but impactful plays. He's not a very flashy, he's not a high-end skill player, but he's just very effective. He shut down a lot of London's scoring opportunities. He provides puck support for Ottawa in a variety of different ways. Now, on the downside, this is kind of good and kind of bad. He had several really quality scoring chances, but didn't finish. So I think he kind of lacks some high-end puck skills. And for a player that's got his size and mobility, I'm wondering, why didn't he get drafted? As I'm, you know, as I'm watching this game, and then as he gets these pretty gravy scoring chances and just can't get a handle on it, I'm like, oh, that's probably why. So that obviously doesn't bode very well for most fantasy hockey leagues' purposes as well. But, you know, if you can, I mean, he's not drafted, so he doesn't have NHL rights. So that probably excludes him from about 95% of the listeners' leagues that they're in. But if you can add players who have never been drafted, who are, you know, beyond draft eligible, and get your prospect rights on him and hope that he signs an NHL contract, there's a shot there. And there's not a huge upside, but there's a player here who could play some games in the NHL for you that you can acquire for nothing. So, and he's already 20 years old, so you don't have to wait more than 2 or 3 years to find out if this is going to materialize into something or not. So it's a pretty low risk, low reward player, but at this level, at his age, he was really good. Like, I was high on Noel Hoffenmeyer, and he's not panning out. So this could be another one of those guys that, you know, they're just older players playing younger players and standing out for a reason. So we'll see what he does if he signs a pro contract and plays in the Coast or in the American Hockey League when he turns 21 next year. We'll see what he does then. That might be the better time to take him off your watch list and see if you can add him as a prospect. But he's someone who I think you definitely want to look into in your league and maybe keep an eye on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't have a lot to say about him, but I did find his Fantasy Hockey Life player card and can tell you that he hits a fair amount. So that's cool. And his goals per 60 are actually kind of high, even though maybe, as you mentioned, he's not the most prolific finisher, but in the time that he has and the times that he has finished, he's decent there. So yeah, I don't know what to say about Samuel Mayer, but as you mentioned, I'm in some leagues where you can add guys that have gone through the draft already. And maybe if he doesn't even get an NHL contract, maybe he gets an AHL contract and proves himself. So there's some potential there.
I mean, we're not talking about the next Zamula here, but, you know, I'm saying there's a chance. Well, that's all the notes I had from this game, Victor. Unless you had any other thoughts, I think we should wrap her up. All right. So thanks for listening to Report 47, everybody. Hope you like the show. If you want to give us some feedback and tell us what you thought, what you want to hear us talk about, ideas for other shows, etc., you can hit us up on Twitter or X at @DPR_show. I'm at Farling and Victor is Victor Nuno 12. Our producer is Sabarin91. If you have production notes for the show, don't forget, follow the Hockey Pod Net. There's a lot of other good podcasts on there. Retweet the show. Hit #THPN when you do. Please subscribe on iTunes if you don't already, or Spotify, or wherever you get the show. Drop those 5-star reviews and keep on listening, and we'll keep on doing shows. See you on the next report. Keep your stick on the ice.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Let's do that hockey.